New York may be, as they say, the city that never sleeps, but who keeps it running after most of us have gone to bed? Night Shift NYC tells the story of the over 200,000 people, the nurses, cabbies, fry cooks, train conductors, and doormen who work from midnight until morning. It's published by the University of California Press, and I'm delighted that it brings Russell D. Sharman, an associate professor of anthropology at Brooklyn College, his co-author Cheryl Harris Sharman, and photographer Corey Hayes to the show today. Hi. Welcome,
Hello.
All of
Hi.
You.
Thanks for having us.
Cheryl, how significant is it that a book about New York City has been published by the University of California Press?
You know, a lot of people ask that question. We think that the University of California Press, first of all, we had a relationship with an editor there to start with, and he grew up in New York. His father worked nights, so he was really excited about the book from the very first time we mentioned it. We had other opportunities to go with other publishers, but we really felt like they understood that it needed to be released as a trade book in beautiful paper that could really showcase the photographs.
And how would you define Night Shift? Does it have to start at midnight and end at 8 o'clock or so?
That's a pretty routine schedule. It doesn't have to do that. We focused on locations that were open 24 hours, so that excluded bars, and it excluded a lot of places that didn't have a 24-hour cycle to their labor force. But we didn't necessarily stick to a 12 to midnight schedule.
And I've been saying over 200,000 people. Is that reasonable?
That's reasonable. It's close to 250.
Before we begin, I should probably admit that I've had two Night Shift jobs in my past. The first was at a type shop. I don't even think they exist anymore, but I worked from midnight to 8 in the morning. And then the second was on a radio talk show that ran from midnight to 5 a.m., but thankfully only one night a week. Russell, did this begin as an anthropology project for you?
I suppose for me it certainly did, because that is what I do. The previous book, Tenants of East Harlem, was an ethnography of East Harlem.
Well, does the Night Shift attract a certain type of person?
I think that it does. You know, there's a whole range of folks who work the night shift, some by choice, certainly, some because it's the only option they had. So they're not always night people, and that can be a real hardship on you if you're not good at staying up all night. A lot of folks struggle through, even for years on end.
That was my problem.
Yeah.
My theory was that when I was working from midnight to 8 was that I'd have the best part of the day to myself after I woke up. Mm-hmm. And then I would give my boss the rest of it. But it turned out that I only woke up around midnight.
Yeah.
I was groggy the rest of the day.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, even we spent a year up all night researching this book and going out and talking to folks. And it was definitely hard for us.
Not for me. It's harder for me to be awake at noon than it is at midnight.
So different people have different cycles.
Right.
So night owls will find this easier. And did you just find yourself thinking, gee, this is the ideal job for
really,
me?
I was the most alert that I've ever been.
Well, so does that mean that you still go to sleep at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning?
Uh-huh.
And we've actually been out, since the book came out, we've been out a few more times. Just we can't seem to stop for some reason. We've been out talking to more folks.
Were there jobs that you knew you had to include?
There were. Certainly for us, we thought some of the iconic jobs like taxi drivers, the bodegas, delis, convenience stores, whatever you want to call them, depends on the neighborhood, diners certainly. There were other jobs that we did not include, first of all, because we would have had to have 6 volumes of this book to cover every night shift job. But we really wanted jobs that anyone could walk in and experience. And in that way, as you read the book, you could go out, and hopefully you will, and see what a wonderful place New York is at night.
But were people open to being interviewed? For example, many, if not most, of the night shift workers you spoke to were immigrants. Did you expect that, Cheryl?
We did not expect that, actually. And I think that they were reticent at first to talk to us, but then we found out that being lucid at 3 in the morning is a sort of bonus to get them to open up. And no one's ever actually approached them and asked them what their lives are like, where they came from, whether they have a wife and children back in Bangladesh, how much they earn. No one's asked those questions.
So why do so many new immigrants end up working the graveyard shift? Is it because they're more likely to get a job like that?
Well, I think that we talk about this in the book a little bit about how New York, you know, it's always been a city of immigrants. And certainly 100 years ago, the main industry for new immigrants was in construction and in manufacturing. And since that has left New York, we've become much more of a service economy. It is the place where immigrants tend to slip in to the labor market. And certainly on the night shift, if your English isn't quite as good as some of your colleagues, you don't have to interact with customers quite as often. it actually turns out to be a great entry point for a lot of immigrants.
Is a night shift more forgiving when it comes to undocumented workers?
You know, one of the things that was also a surprise, and as much as we may or may not have expected to find immigrants on the night shift, we did expect to find more undocumented immigrants on the night shift. And the fact is, most of the folks we talked to were documented. They were either on
maybe they're the ones who are willing to talk to you.
Maybe, but you know, we never. Maybe one or two times out of the hundreds of people we spoke to did someone say, I'm not interested in talking. And that's one of the great discoveries of this book is how amazingly friendly and warm and open the night shift is in New York City.
It really is like a small town, and it's very communal, and people seem to know each other. And if we met somebody in Penn Station at 3 a.m. who did a job, we might have seen them on a train platform in Flatbush at 4 a.m. 6 months later, and they remembered us, and we remembered them, and people were always very willing to accommodate us.
Corey, let's talk about these photographs. There are a few individuals shown in the book, but most of the photos are of things and places, a clock, an empty diner stool, neon sign.
Yeah, most of the photographs, I think when we started the project, I'm usually a portrait photographer just by trade. That's what I do most often. When I started going out and thinking about the project and starting to think of this as like a portrait project, I found that a lot of the undocumented people, they didn't necessarily want to be photographed. They were fine being interviewed, but photographing them, that was a totally different thing. So I wanted to find a way to still kind of make it seem like the city was still alive. And the two things that stood out to me was the use of all the synthetic light. If you go to my website, you'll see some of the photos in color.
We've also posted a slideshow of some of the photos that you took
yeah.
with the specific time that you took them.
Yes.
That's important, isn't
it? I thought that was very important. It gives, when the book is written, it's kind of written from like a evening till morning thing, and I wanted the photos to kind of carry that through as well, that you got a sense of what kind of happened when at night in New York.
My guests are Corey Hayes, who provided the photographs for the book Night Shift NYC, published by the University of California Press, and its two authors, Russell Lee Sharman and Cheryl Harris Sharman. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So Russell or Cheryl, I throw this out to both of you. What are the benefits of working the night shift before we go into the more difficult aspects
sure.
of it?
Well, some of the benefits are what we had said earlier, this idea that New York at night is a much slower, friendlier, open place. And we found that people were much more willing to speak to us. And I think that's because there aren't as many people on the street coming in and out of these stores. You get a real sense of peace in the city that is really hard to find during the day. Some of the other more practical benefits, especially for working families, is a lot of times childcare is just too expensive. And so working shift work is one way for parents to trade off childcare. So a lot of folks work the night shift because they had kids at home that their spouse was taking care of during the night and vice versa during the day. So that was one great benefit.
That's so they come home at 8 o'clock. They wake up in time for the kid to come home from school.
Mm-hmm.
That's especially a benefit for women. A lot of women talked about how nice it was to only miss the hours that their child was asleep, and then they could go home and be with that child for a few hours before the child went to school.
But what are some of the real disadvantages? I mentioned that a lot of people are groggy throughout most of the day, but aren't there health issues?
There are health issues, and I think a lot of people use the word cancer. That's actually been something that's been hotly debated for a long time, and research has recently come out about that to link it once and for all as a probable carcinogen. But there are a lot of...
Working late at night is a carcinogen?
It's not actually a 1 plus 1 equals 2, and that's something I want to stress very carefully. There is a lot of new research coming out about how exactly that is. It's a lack of melatonin or when the melatonin is produced. There's a cycle of light and dark that our body needs to follow, and if it's not following that, there are ways that we can mitigate some of those health effects.
Unless we bring people in from Scandinavia, from northern Scandinavia, who already live in that kind of environment. Don't people also gain weight on the night shift?
There is often weight gain. We experienced that in the year that we stayed up, and people refer to it a lot as the overnight 15 or the overnight 20. So
that's just because during the night they just pop food into their mouths to keep themselves occupied?
Well, no. The GI tract is very sensitive late at night, so it's hard to eat a salad. Your body just rejects that, isn't really interested in that, so it would prefer to have pancakes and carbs, but you need to avoid that. You need to follow a better eating schedule and make sure you get plenty of exercise.
Well, I think also just being at a shift schedule, it's difficult to know when do you eat lunch Lunch has a certain sort of temporal quality to it, and when is that? Is that midnight in exchange for noon? And what do you eat in that meal? And it becomes very confusing about when to eat and how to eat.
We always had a pot of coffee going at the type shop, and my rule was no coffee after 3 o'clock because it occurred to me that I was having a much harder time. It was hard enough falling asleep when I got home after 8:30 or so, and the rest of the world was up and making a lot of noise. To begin with, and there was light. No matter how much I tried to keep the light out, it was still a problem. But then if I'd had coffee, it was almost impossible for me to fall asleep.
I think that's why we ultimately flipped our schedules to experience that firsthand, so that we could ask better questions based on our personal experience about light and shutting out the light, having blackout curtains, not having coffee after a certain hour.
What did you do on weekends? Did you try to keep up the schedule?
We found that it was easier to keep our schedule on a night shift schedule, which lots of the research suggests that that's the better way to go about it.
But most of these people, I'm sure, just shift into normal schedules.
There are a lot, especially those who work these sort of limited shifts, like nurses will often work four nights on, four nights off. It's also true of ferry boat captains and so forth. And a lot of them will switch back to a day shift for those 4 days that they're off. And they talk about how difficult that is, but for whatever reason, whether it's because of social relationships that are difficult to maintain if you stay on the night shift, but many of them do switch back and forth, and it is much harder on your system to do that.
You said it's hard to keep social relationships maintained. They experience social isolation?
Oh, absolutely. I think that a lot of folks complained loudly about that being one of the biggest drawbacks to being on the night shift. And certainly we felt that on the year that we were on the night shift. We lost touch with a lot of folks because we were sleeping when they were up and could have coffee, or when they went out at night, we were at work. So it was difficult.
We're also married, and we were working together on this project, which obviously meant we were constantly together. But a lot of people joked, and then some lamented the fact that they never saw their spouses if one worked nights and one worked days.
Although some also said it saved their marriage.
Yeah.
But I could imagine in some cases it also made people more irritable within the marriage, because you can get irritable when you have sleep deprivation.
You can.
By the way, we invite our listeners to call us at 212-433-9692. If you have worked the night shift, 212-433-WNYC. Corey, you live in New York.
Yes, I do.
Had you done a lot of photographing at night before you got involved in this project?
Not at all. Like I said before, I'm really a portrait person. So this was a brand new project and opportunity for me. And I'm just lucky that, Russell and Cheryl and I are good friends. And when the book came around, they said, hey, if you want to do this, let's do it.
So. One thing I should point out, too, is that we were very clear with Corey that we didn't want illustrations of the text. We wanted him to have his own photo essay of the night. So he came out with us on several occasions and just walked around with us to get his own sense of what was it like to be up all night, because Corey's not a night person.
No, not at all.
So a lot of the photos, some of the photos do overlap with what we write, so they are in some ways illustrating some of those chapters, but they're also his own vision of what it's like to be up all night.
I was interested in what some of the people had to tell you. For example, Tamar, is that how she pronounced her name? She's a pediatric ICU nurse, and she says the patients are really in her care at night, so she had more autonomy than she might have during the day when all those doctors were around and alert. There probably were plenty of doctors around who weren't alert because of what we know about what goes on in hospitals.
Right. That was a huge factor for most every industry we encountered, was the feeling of autonomy and the feeling of, these are generally entry-level jobs, because once you have seniority, you're going generally to move to a day shift position. So a lot of these people are younger, or they fear they don't have the language skills, or they are just barely documented, but they don't really interact that often with customers. And they really felt like this is their opportunity to sort of run the show.
And Fatima at the Cheyenne Diner, she likes working nights because management isn't on site.
Right. Although they do watch, that was at the Cheyenne, it's now closed, of course, but they did watch on security cameras all night long. So she recognized that they were watching her from home.
And they were watching because they were afraid that the staff was going to steal them blind at night?
Well, there was a little bit of that, and also I remember one story from Steve in the first chapter. He talks about
at the Skylight Diner.
He no longer works there as well. That's one of the things too. A lot of these folks, they move around so much, it's hard to keep track. But he talks about he got a call one night, and the boss was telling him so and so needs coffee on table 4, and he's thinking, how do they know this? And it's because of the camera, and they're at home watching a live feed, and he got so angry he quit that job. It was not at the Skylight. Because he felt as though they were encroaching on his sort of command of the night shift.
One listener wrote in that she was never as terrified as she was when she worked the night shift. And I wonder about that. I know that there were a couple of times I was afraid when I was coming home at 5 o'clock in the morning. I went to the subway, and mm-hmm. these muggers started stealing from everybody, the few people who were on the platform. Mm-hmm. Walking those streets sometimes, even streets that will have millions of people during the day,
sure.
can be kind of scary.
Well, certainly. I think a couple of things should be said about that. I mean, certainly one, as we said, one of the things that we found that was surprising was actually how friendly New York was at night. And I'm sure that's in some ways in contrast to our expectations. I think, too, New York has changed a lot in the last 20 to 30 years. It is intrinsically a safer place than it was in the 70s and 80s. So walking around at night may also have a different flavor, especially in Manhattan, may have a different flavor than it did even 10 years ago. Now, that's not to say that it's not dangerous, but I think in some ways in New York, you have to be careful day or night.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll take listener calls. And also, I'll point out that one of our listeners, Dennis in Brooklyn, who's a bartender, is really upset that we haven't mentioned bartenders. Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guests are Russell Lee Sharman and Cheryl Harris Sharman, who are the authors of a book called Night Shift NYC. Also with us is Corey Hayes, who provided a photographic essay for the book, which is published by the University of California Press. Stay with us. We're back with Russell Lee Sharman and Cheryl Harris Sharman, who have written a book called Night Shift NYC. The photographs in the book were supplied by Corey Hayes, and the book is published by the University of California Press. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692, people who have worked the night shift. Let's take a couple of those calls. We begin with Nicole from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, Nicole.
Hey.
Hi,
I'm
Nicole.
A labor and delivery nurse, and I work at nights, and I just think that if you go into labor at night, you have a higher chance of actually having a non-intervention, real, true labor. And as a labor and delivery nurse, I think it's nice to be witness to that, even though it can be really difficult to be on a night schedule. It's disruptive to the rest of your life, but I tend to like it more when I'm actually on nights, because you have less, you know, doctors intervening, less scheduled C-sections, less induction. So I think that that's something that's really interesting about being at births at night.
On the other hand, do you ever find yourself kind of relaxing to the point of lethargy and suddenly having to wake up and do something really complicated?
Shockingly, no. I don't, which is shocking, because I was really nervous about getting onto the night shift for that reason. I'm not a night person at all, but it's amazing. Like, I never, even if I'm groggy during the day, at night, like, you just have that sense of responsibility and adrenaline that I guess just keeps you on your toes. I never feel like I'm endangering someone, even though, like, sometimes I'll step into the elevator. One time I stepped into the elevator when I was leaving in the morning, and, like, the buzzer went off in the elevator, and I was like, what is that? Like, I thought it was a machine. You know, you have these, like, at the end, you're like, God, I'm so tired. I can't believe I just went through that night, but...
Yeah, we certainly found that. We talked to a lot of nurses, Nicole, and we are so amazed at the job you guys do, and I think that we found... A lot of the nurses we talk to would agree with you. I think that they feel that in some ways, even on the night, they're more alert than on the day, because there is a real sense of, I have to be alert, because there's not as much people, there's not as much activity around, not as much support and help.
So you live on adrenaline.
I suppose in some
ways.
And
I think you just also realize the severity of how important it is to do a good job in a PICU or a NICU or what you're doing, Nicole.
David is calling now at work in Manhattan. Obviously, you're not on the night shift right now, David.
No, but I do. My hours do extend into the night shift, and as a creative person, actually from my childhood being an artist, I've always stayed up late at night, either working on a drawing or a model or something, and just carried over into my adult life.
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of folks that we talk to too who live sort of freelance or non-traditional work who stay up all night working. And Cheryl, actually, as a writer, has always had a kind of self-imposed night shift.
But that's by choice,
that's
as opposed
choice.
To being hired to work certain hours. Are those people happier because they like to write at 3 o'clock in the morning?
I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I think a lot of writers and creative people find that that sort of night quiet where the phone isn't ringing and there isn't, you know, as much noise outside is a good time to focus.
And, Corey, a lot of photographers like to do their printing at night, don't they?
Oh, yeah. No, when I first moved to New York, I had darkroom space here that was 24 hours, and I loved working at night then.
One of the interesting aspects of having done a talk show from midnight to 5 was that the phones never stop ringing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned. But it would represent people at different stages of their day.
Sure.
Some people had stayed up, and so the early callers were people who stayed up. And then as the show progressed, I was getting people who were coming home
mm-hmm.
from having been out for one reason or another, or coming back from jobs until the 5 o'clock in the morning, where people were getting up to go off to
right.
their yeah. early morning jobs.
Right.
That was one of the really fun things to see, staying up all night, every night, as observers and not being on the job per se, but watching that evolution of the night, to see both the overlap of people who were out partying and having a good time in the city. And that was also interesting, is that if we weren't working, we were some of the only folks who were sober on the night shift, which is something that people on the day shift don't typically have to deal with. My heart goes out to the bartender, but for the most part, you don't have to deal with inebriated customers on the day shift in a grocery store or a convenience store or a diner, but at night.
Did they talk about that? Having to, you know, send somebody home?
Yes. All of them.
3 o'clock in the morning, you got to get somebody to leave.
We took a train out of Penn Station after 3:30. A lot of the trains out to Long Island and New Jersey, the kids call them the drunk train if it leaves after 3:30. So we took one of those just to experience it and see what it was like. And a kid got thrown off, and the conductors talked about how, you know, I mean, for the most part, they have a good sense of humor about it, and they don't take their jobs too seriously. They understand that this is part of it, and they laughed a little bit about, you know, he got in my face and I had to throw him off. That's what we had to do.
And when we saw Steve and Fatima, the two main characters for the diner chapters, they have just wonderful stories about how to manage inebriated customers and how to get them to sort of take water instead of another beer. And the amazing art of manipulation that the service industry has of dealing with these customers.
My next caller is Charlie from Hoboken. Hi, you're on the air, Charlie.
What a great topic. I've been a night person pretty much all my life. I don't know if it's nature, nurture, or biology, but as a kid I had a ham radio set and I used to stay up listening. I've been in the music business and in television production, and a lot of my shifts have been overnight. And I think some of it is a positive mindset. One of the things that I tell myself a lot is, as the sun goes down, my IQ goes up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel that way too.
And the other thing too, and when I was doing a lot of work in clubs and you know, with bands and stuff, we used to have this thing where we would make sure that we would eat breakfast before we went to sleep. This way, you could stay in bed an extra hour.
So, but you were going to ask whether certain night shift schedules are better than others.
I've been on pretty much every shift in the world, and I think the one for me that was the toughest was 11 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Hmm.
And it just was the most. It just created the most alienation and most kind of separation from my friends. I mean, it was very, very little time to, you know, to interact with people. And
sure.
But the other side of it is, you know, the traffic was always going the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'd have to come into New York, there'd never be traffic, you know, and there was always a place to park, you know, at 11 o'clock at night. So.
Yeah, I think the 11 to 7 or the 12 to 8, those pure overnight shifts are the most difficult if you're trying to maintain a sort of normal social life, especially. The other shifts where it sort of bleeds into the night or bleeds into the morning, it depends on your personality, but they're a little more manageable when it comes to those kinds of relationships.
So, you know, for example, a nurse who works 8 to 8 might be able to still have dinner with friends before she goes to start her shift, and she could even have breakfast with friends after her shift.
But my problem when I came home at 8 o'clock was that I was trying to go to sleep at 9 o'clock, when the rest mm-hmm. of the world thinks it's perfectly okay to make as much noise as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
We are now speaking to Rich from Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, Rich.
Hi, Rich.
In the mid-1990s, I was in my first year of training to be a surgeon, and they had me in the emergency room. Worked in any 10-day period, I would work a 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, a 9 p.m. to 11 a.m. shift, and these shifts would vary throughout the time. And I found that it was, while there were some advantages to having some they'd like time off to go get a haircut and the bank and those sorts of things. I found it was brutal in the sense that I was never really awake. At 26, I felt more ill than I've ever felt. I'm now 41, and I have never felt worse than I felt in that 4 week period that I worked through shift work in the ER.
Wow.
Well, for many, many years, there's been a sort of raging debate about, especially training for doctors and nurses certainly too, but the debate over these long shifts for interns and residents and whether or not they're good for patients, whether or not they're good for doctors, and certainly that there hasn't really been a decision on that, but though there have been some regulations passed that have tried to curtail some of the negative effects.
Well, new rules have just been proposed, but yes, the last set of rules that were a lot more humane turned out to be totally ignored.
Right,
that's in most
the problem.
Instances.
Largely, that's been the problem, is that the data is there suggesting that it's really bad for interns, and New England Journal of Medicine has published some great studies on that.
My guests are Cheryl Harris-Sharman, writer and researcher, whose work has appeared in Lancet, the Miami Herald, and San Francisco Chronicle, among other publications. Russell Lee Sharman, associate professor of anthropology at Brooklyn College, author of The Tenants of East Harlem. And Corey Hayes, who's a professional photographer who provided the photographs for this new book called Night Shift NYC, published by University of California Press. We're taking your calls at 212-433-WNYC, and we've been getting wonderful calls. And one is from Joe from Manhattan. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking
my
call. You know, during the 90s, from 90 to 99, I was a New York City bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, when I had very low seniority, it was quite often you had to work a late shift. And I used to work the night shift.
Right.
From 12 to 8 and from even 1 o'clock to 9. And I remember it just was so brutal to try to stay awake and drive.
Well, yeah, well, that's a frightening thought, too. But, you know, one of the guys that we talked to from the book, he actually, at the time that we spoke to him, worked for the MTA's homeless outreach program. But he drove a bus, I believe it was in the late 80s, early 90s as well. And he said, actually, that was a worse job than doing homeless outreach over the night shift.
Are you talking about Will?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because Will also says that he thinks crime is worse now than it used to be. All the statistics suggest otherwise.
Right. It's a curious assessment. I think that's how we phrased our interpretation of that. But I think he's talking about Times Square looking really pretty and not necessarily being as pretty as it looks, which I think we all agree with.
Now, Joe, were you afraid when you were driving? Sometimes you were the only person in the bus.
Yeah. You know, I remember there was only maybe one or two moments where I was actually really afraid or kind of freaked out by the individuals that that got on the bus. I mean, I have a lot of stories about people, individuals that I ran into.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the nice things about it was the lack of traffic. And then also I got to meet some of the regular customers and become really good friends with them. I actually had met my wife.
Wow.
She was a waitress, hostess, and she would get on the bus after her shift. And she would get on my bus two or three nights a week, and we eventually end up dating and then marrying.
That's fantastic
a
story.
Yeah. We have another person who has a marriage story along those lines. Hi, Laura.
Hi,
Laura from
you?
Chatham, New Jersey. You also got married because of the night shift?
Yeah, I did. mine's not so happy a story, though.
Oh, no.
I think the night shift is very strange. I worked from 12 to 8 in television production. And it's just very odd because you don't get to meet a lot of people. You don't get to have a normal dating life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I very quickly moved in with my boyfriend, who also worked the 12 to 8 shift at the same company that I worked for. And it just seemed to make sense to get married because we were the only two people we ever saw.
Well, that narrows it down.
And ironically, when we both started working the day shift, we got divorced. It's very strange. And the other strange social aspect, I think, of working the night shift is that, you know, a lot of people, like on Thursday and Friday, go out for drinks, like for happy hour after work.
Sure.
It's very strange when you get off work at 8 a.m. in the morning and you want to go out and
absolutely
get a drink.
And then you want to drink, right?
Yeah.
I'm so glad you mentioned
look at
that.
You a little funny.
We found that a lot.
We found that a lot, and I think that's one of the things that we really wanted to be careful about writing, because we didn't want to make people look like alcoholics drinking at 8 a.m. when they had finished a really brutal shift in the ER or in a bodega where everyone had been yelling at them all night.
But they wanted to have that drink the same way others
the
did
same
to
way.
Relax.
Right.
So folks,
and coffee
with,
doesn't do that.
No.
But the folks with the cups of coffee who may have been drunk the night before sort of look at them sideways, and we always thought that was ironic, that they were just trading one stimulant for another.
Yeah, but I felt that for every like bad story that we heard on the night shift, that there was an equally sweet story.
Mm-hmm.
That one evening when we were over in the meatpacking district, Russell was interviewing one of the food cart vendors, and after I'd say like 15 minutes, he asked Russell to watch his cart while he went to the bathroom. And so Russell got to sell hot dogs for a few.
Rather interesting.
Which then turned into one of our most interesting stories, because then some women came up and thought that Russell was the actual street vendor and asked him if he had any Coke or E's to sell.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a normal occurrence to ask.
It's something about
vendors.
Russell's face.
I think it all depends on what area of the city your food cart's in.
We have Rebecca from Manhattan on the line. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I had been working in a law firm in the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
and the lobby of the building was a kind of a huge grillwork of brass. And when I would work, you know, I was doing swing shift, and sometimes I'd get out more like 2, 3, 4
sure.
in the morning, and they would be polishing all the brass, and the air was like foggy with solvent.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So I did wind up, now it's, you know, a while later, I have chronic leukemia, and I think that probably didn't help. I mean, I've done, when I was young, I did other, like, industrial graphic arts type work, so.
Well, certainly you bring up an important point, and that is that a lot of the dirty work, cleaning the city and other things, does tend to get done at night. One of the folks...
Well, in all cities, in New York, it becomes a little more difficult because other things are still going on at the same time.
Right.
In Paris or London, the city pretty much closes down.
Well, you know,
New York's
subway system is the only subway system in the world that runs 24 hours, which means that when they have to do track work, they have to shut things down, and it's usually at night.
Or even when they're emptying out the trash. I mean, they have these big trains that come through late at night, and that's what takes all of the trash
out. They're always annoying. You're waiting and waiting and waiting for a train, and you finally hear one coming, and it's this big orange thing.
Oh, believe me, at like 4 in the morning after shooting photos, the last thing you wanted to do, you just wanted to get home. And to have these trains come in,
Mark, we don't have much time, but I wanted to get you in here. Mark is from Putnam County. Hi, you're on the air.
How we doing?
Okay.
Hi, Mark.
I've been a cop for 20 years, and I spent the last 7 of it working midnights.
Hmm.
And I don't think you can ever really look at normal the same way again after you've worked a couple of years working midnights.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? Day shift puts you in contact with a totally different kind of situation?
Most of the time, anybody you're meeting at 4 o'clock in the morning with a poor explanation, there's more going on than meets the eye.
Yeah.
So that means that you probably can make more arrests even though you see fewer people.
Well, it's pretty much like dealing with a higher density quality of clientele. anybody out at 4 o'clock in the morning looking really excitable, something is wrong.
Well, that might have been us.
We have to leave it there, unfortunately. Thank you so much for calling us. And thank you all. And my great thanks to my guests, Russell Lee Sharman and Cheryl Harris Sharman. Their book, Night Shift NYC, with photographs by Corey Hayes, published by the University of California Press. And I suspect that we'll be receiving a lot of email from listeners who want to add to these stories. You want me to pass them on to you,
please,
or are you finished with the night shift?
No, we're never finished. Please also come to our website, www.nightshiftnyc.com, and we have a blog.
Okay, and you can always check out the photos on our website.